Have to fit this stuff up here. So it's good to be here. If you didn't hear it again, my name's Andy with my wife Pamela and the kids. I won't go over the names because nobody remembers them. But just so you know, Andy Odell, he said he wouldn't be here. He did not give me a time limit. So it's a rainy day. We can be here all afternoon, right? So, but yeah, thank you for letting us be here. It's been about 2 years since I last preached due to different circumstances, so I may be a bit rusty, but I hope you forgive me. But we'll get right into it. So let me start by asking a question, and you can raise your hand. How many of you have ever done something that you felt after a while was pointless or meaningless? You raise your hand. Okay, everybody. Okay. So I'm currently a nurse in a hospital, but before that, I was in construction, in a construction company. Thankfully, I was only there for 3 years, but I got out of it because of a very bad work environment, constant arguments and fighting between coworkers, crazy work schedule. They put me in charge of different work sites a little bit too quickly for my liking. And after a while of poor management, not getting things done, or not getting the things that I needed to get the jobs done, I began to think that everything I was doing was meaningless, was pointless. Just one example, for about 6 months, I went every day to a place called Lancaster. Dr. Zerbe knows Lancaster, but that's about an hour and a half from where we live in Pennsylvania. I was going there every day. So that's a lot of driving. And we were at a, we were do our job there was to do flooring for bathrooms, 80 different bathrooms in a mental hospital, basically. And due to different mistakes that my boss had made, we ended up having to do the bathrooms 5 times over. So by the third time, I was very disappointed. I'm like, what's the point of this? Then by, the fifth time, it's like, this is ridiculous. Like, there's no point in doing it over again. But yes, I began to think, what is the point in all of this? And besides that, I would come and have workers under me who come to work, high, doing drugs before work, hiding in the bathroom all day, things like that. I just couldn't get anything done. And other coworkers who would work like I would, they also came to that same realization that this job is pointless. It's like striving after the wind. Some of you may know where I'm going with that phrase, striving after the wind. But like I said, thankfully, that period of life of my life only lasted for 3 years. But maybe there's some of you here who have done something what you would consider meaningless for a much longer amount of time, maybe 10 years or 20 years. Hopefully not, but you never know. Imagine though, if your whole life was like that. You spend your whole life chasing after meaningless activities and pursuits. Maybe you were chasing after something that was you consider to be pleasurable or something that seems like the right thing to do, only to find out at the end that your time was spent in futility. It was spent in emptiness. It was striving after the wind. Right? And in reality, and according to what we'll read today, there are billions of people whose lives are being spent and who have been spent in meaningless activities and pursuits. And I'll explain what I mean. We'll be looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I'm not going to read it quite yet. The whole point of that chapter is that God alone gives meaning and value to life. That, I guess you could call that the title of the sermon if you want. God alone gives meaning and value to life. Without God, we are simply wasting the 60, 70, 80, 90 years that we're spending here. That's the sad truth. God has created such a world in that the only way to live a meaningful life is by being close to Him. I don't know if anybody agrees with that this morning. If you don't know much about Ecclesiastes, we believe it was written by King Solomon about 3,000 years ago. It's a very old book. Okay, now Solomon, if you know him, he started out well, which you can read on your own in the book of 1 Kings. But somewhere along the way, though, he began to accumulate things in his life that eventually turned his heart away from God. He tells us in Ecclesiastes that he dedicated his life, or much of his life, to pointless activities, and we'll see that in chapter 2. However, the book of Ecclesiastes seems to be evidence that near the end of his life, he probably did turn it around. He repented and turned back to God. That's not only is Ecclesiastes evidence of that, there's also a Jewish tradition that says that. So I think we can reasonably assume that he probably did at some point repent. And what I love about the book is that much of it is written from this sort of bleak perspective of someone without God. But then every now and then he puts in these, he flips it to the perspective of someone who is close to God, who's someone who does have God in their lives. We'll see that. We see that contrast throughout the book. Okay. So I'm going to use the whole chapter. I'm not going to go into a ton of detail due to time and things like that. And I'm not going to read it all at once. I'm going to go section by section or point by point, and we'll read the verses that correspond to each point that I have. Okay? So, I'm going to start with verses 1 to 11. So again, Ecclesiastes 2, verses 1 to 11. So this is Solomon speaking. He says, I said in my heart, come now, I'll test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity, and the striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So the first point here is that pleasures, even pleasures, are meaningless without God. I think verse 10 is key to this passage. He says, I'll say it again, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. What is he saying? He openly admits that whatever he wanted, he did, or he got. Okay? He didn't exercise any amount of self-control in this part of the passage. If he wanted something, he got it. Okay, we see that very clearly. Now imagine being in Solomon's situation, having all that access to all that he did as king. Okay, we can't be too hard on Solomon, I think. I think many of us would fall into the same trap as he did if we were in his shoes. Imagine having all that wealth. You can go on a splurge if you want. That's what he did, okay? He mentions here, I gave quite a long list if you didn't hear it, or you weren't paying attention, but it's 12 things that he went after. Verse 3, he pursues the buzz of alcohol. He makes projects for himself, parks, gardens, trees. He acquires possessions, slaves, animals, money. He gets entertainment, singers. And of course, we know that Solomon's main downfall was what? Women, yes. He goes after lots and lots and lots of women, okay? And notice also, this is very important, there is no mention of God in this passage. There is no mention of God. He's excluding God from all these pleasures. So broadly speaking, broadly here, I think we can say he went after three types of pleasures: possessions, sex, and entertainment. Okay, a lot could be said about that, couldn't it? Just those three things. How many people, I think about possessions, how many people chase after money, chase after getting more and more and more stuff? Okay, you know, Pamela and I, the proper pronunciation is Pamela, but we say Pamela just to make it easier for people. But we've seen people ruined by just greed and wanting to get more and more stuff. I knew a man who worked with me in this construction company I mentioned. So we worked 50, 60 hours, sometimes more a week together, which is a lot in and of itself. But then at night, every day after work, at least Monday through Friday, he would go home and go to a cleaning job. He'd spend about 3-4 hours there every evening. Then on the weekends, if he wasn't where I was working, he would work with a landscaper or drive a truck for somebody. He was always, always, always working. And he had two daughters. He had a wife. And you know what happened? He lost all of that because he just spent all of his time doing other things. He's always outside of the house. And I'm sure probably some of you know examples of people ruined by greed, maybe. Okay, the category of sex. Okay, we talked about possession, sex. I don't even think I have to mention too much about that. We know that people create all sorts of damage. All sorts of damage because they couldn't stay with one person. It feels good, but afterward, I promise you, going after different people like Solomon, it leaves a trail of destruction. Pamela and I have seen families, again, ruined because of adultery, because of being with more, sleeping with different people, okay? And if we're talking about this, what's messed up about our culture is not, it's not just individual families, is it, that are ruined. It goes to a societal level, right? Sexual sins and the amount of sexual sins we have in the U.S., it has led to so much societal damage. It has led to so much family ruin. People want to minimize the effects of sexual sin, but it's simply not harmless. It's not. It ruins families. Category of entertainment. This is a tricky one. People, man, they waste so much time. Some of us waste so much time on sports, on movies. Here he mentions singers, okay, music. I'm not saying that sports, I'm not saying that music, movies, they're not inherently evil, obviously. We can watch sports, we can watch a movie, okay, given the content. But if we put them in God's place, that's when they become meaningless, isn't it? That's when they become meaningless and pointless activities, okay? And I think, too, that entertainment, we're talking about the church now, I think entertainment is one area of our lives that maybe goes unchecked, if we're being honest, okay? I think in church, it's a general rule. We know, you shouldn't be greedy, you shouldn't commit adultery, you shouldn't commit fornication, but we don't often carefully consider entertainment, do we? Okay, to be honest, and this is, I've had to have a self-talk about this, like if we can watch a movie, right, for 2 or 3 hours, if we can watch a sports game for 2 or 3 hours and we're having fun, it's not a struggle, but if we struggle, don't we, to give God that same amount of time, don't we? And I think it's, if we're being honest, I'm probably stepping on some toes, and that's okay. I know Steve Huffman said there, he told me in a meeting that he likes that, so I'm fulfilling his wishes. But if we're being honest, I think it points to messed up priorities. Why can we give 2 or 3 hours to a game? Why can we give 2 or 3 hours to a movie, yet we can't give that same amount of time joyfully to God, the one who gave everything for us? Does anybody agree here? Please say amen. I like participation. Okay. We need to look at our priorities, don't we? And I know a lot more could be said about these areas of pleasure. And the sad truth is that if Solomon were alive today, he would have a much longer list of possible distractions, wouldn't he? Much longer list, okay? But I want to notice two more things about this section before moving on. Okay, he says in verse 10, he says he found pleasure in what he pursued. Now, he doesn't stay there in that mindset, okay? Some people stay there. They stay in what I would call this ignorant bliss, this ignorant satisfaction, okay? They never consider deeper things beyond what they're committed to pursuing. And that's the truth, that many people, they happily waste their time without God because they never think about the end result of all their efforts. But Solomon, like I just said, he does not stay there in that mindset. He considered the meaning of his activities. He concludes what at the end of that section? That it's all empty. He gained nothing in going after all these pleasures. It was meaningless. The singers, the gardens, the trees, the concubines, and so on. Like I said, there's nothing inherently wrong in possessions, in entertainment, in sex, as long as they're within God's boundaries. Okay, as long as they're within God's boundaries, okay? But I said before, there's no mention of God in this part of the passage. We do not see God's name mentioned until the end of the chapter. It's when we exclude God that we run into trouble, okay? So pleasures here become meaningless if God is not in them. It's that simple, Okay, so I'd like to challenge you today with this first point. You know, put God into what even others would say is pleasurable, and we don't really need God in those areas, right? Put these things in their proper place. Sometimes as Americans, we like to put things in their boxes, right? I have my time for God. I have my time for movies. I have my time for sports. I have my time for families, right? But God should be present in all of our boxes, shouldn't he? Amen? I need to know that you're paying attention, okay? God should be present in all of our man-made boxes, okay? Pleasures should never take the place of God. But sadly, we see many people drowning in their distractions. But don't be like other people. You don't have to be like other people, right? Just like Solomon says, these activities are pointless without God. They're pointless, okay? So let's move on to verses 12 to 16. 12 to 16, this will be point number two. So I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what's already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceived that the same event happens to all of them. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance. Seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So what we see is the same pattern again, don't we? But in the first point, he doesn't really give the reason for why pleasures are meaningless without God. Here he does, okay? We'll see that. So we see the same pattern. He goes after something again, and then afterwards he realizes the meaninglessness of it all. This time, though, he goes after wisdom. So let me ask you, do you think this is... Now, James talks about a worldly wisdom. Do you think this is a godly wisdom or a worldly wisdom that he's going after? What do you guys think? Yeah, I'd agree with that. Worldly wisdom. Again, no mention of God. No mention of God. It seems to be that this is all taking place in the setting of being very far away from God while Solomon is chasing after other things, okay? And again, with this pattern, in verse 13, 14, he seems to be temporarily satisfied, chasing after this worldly wisdom. The same ignorant satisfaction, ignorant bliss that we saw in verses 1 to 11. Okay, it makes sense. Right? Worldly wisdom does have a sort of sense in and of itself from a human perspective, right? You don't make poor choices. It looks good in the eyes of others. You can stay out of trouble. But without God, is wisdom true wisdom? Not really. Okay? Wisdom, according to Proverbs, is found in the fear of who? The Lord. Yes, participation. Come on, guys. So the wisdom he must be talking about, I think, is worldly wisdom. Okay. It doesn't really lead you to make godly choices. It doesn't lead you to make choices that bring eternal benefits. Now, it's interesting, isn't it, that even something that we typically associate as something good, when it's divorced from God, it becomes pointless. We can do that with anything. We can do that with even so-called godly things. Take meeting here in church, for example. Church is good. But if you divorce it from God, what does it become? It's pointless. We're just meeting here talking about, I don't know, social issues, things like that. And there are some churches that do that. So church without God is pointless. We can do that with the Bible, even. You can separate God from his word. The Pharisees were excellent at that, weren't they? You take God out of the Bible, you can treat it just like a textbook, you can treat it just like a history book, and you get nothing out of it. Nothing. Dr. Zerbe and I were talking about a guy named Bart Ehrman. Some of you may know of him. He's like a secular scholar. He takes God out of the Bible. Okay? You can take God out of anything and it becomes pointless. It becomes striving after the wind. Okay? So even good things, even things that we can associate as typical godly things, they become meaningless if we take God out of them. But going on, after his moment of ignorant satisfaction ends, he realizes that this wisdom, this worldly wisdom, is pointless. Why? This time he gives a reason, if you look in that section. He says it all ends in death. He goes right to the end of it. It all ends in death. He says the wise person dies just like the fool does. Death, in other words, is the great equalizer. It all ends in death. Now, if this were written from the perspective of somebody being close to God, death wouldn't be seen as this bleak thing. Okay, the New Testament gives us a lot of hope for what happens after death. But this is written from a different perspective, at least in this particular portion of the passage. So everything becomes pointless without God's involvement. Okay, so we're going to move on here to verses 17 to 23. So I hated life. That's his great conclusion. I hated life. So I hated life because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a striving after the wind. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool? Yet he'll be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill, they must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who didn't toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. It's depressing for now, but it'll get better by the end. Right, so what I would say here, the third point, is that a life without God logically leads to despair. Okay, he says in verse 17, like I just said in the beginning there, he came to hate life. Why? Because it's all striving after the wind. Pleasures are meaningless. Wisdom is meaningless. Everything is meaningless because it all ends in death, he says. So it leads us to despair. It surely led him to despair. He says that in verse 20. He came to despair of all that he did. He despaired of life because all of his work, which he had made such an effort for, in the end, it just left to somebody else. Okay? And in Ecclesiastes, what's interesting in Ecclesiastes is the picture we see of death. It's given a very bleak, very drab, very sad portrait. Okay, there's a Solomon, if you look throughout the book, I won't list the verses, but you can look through it on your own. It's sort of mentioned as this place of no remembrance. Nothing really important is happening. There's no eternal rewards. Nothing significant. Okay, now to be honest, I think about death quite a bit because of my workplace. I see a lot of death, but I don't think the average American considers death maybe all that much like we should. We sort of shelter ourselves away from it. We might go to an occasional funeral, right? But a lot of times people stay in this ignorant satisfaction that I keep mentioning, right? My health is good. I've got enough money in the bank. I've got nothing to worry about. But if you think about your life, you think about your eventual death, and if you don't have God, you compare that with a biblical perspective, you have to conclude that life, what's the point of it all? We get up, we eat, maybe we go to work, come back home, eat some more, then we go back to sleep, and we do the same thing over and over and over again. Chapter 1, if you read chapter 1 Ecclesiastes, it's all a cycle. It becomes meaningless without God. There's no point. If it all ends in death, and that's it, what is the point? And what I'll say here is that all other religious systems, not just ones that don't believe in an afterlife, all other religious systems come short. They come up short of the good news we find in the Bible. What do I mean by that? All other religions, broadly speaking, they present a system where our afterlife is usually determined by works. Okay? And it presents a God, if they believe in a God or some sort of spirit or deity, that isn't really worthy of our worship. For example, in Islam, everything is based on works. Your good works have to outweigh your bad works to get into paradise, their version of paradise. But such a God, like, let's say there is a possibility that your good works can outweigh your bad works. What happens? What payment is there for your bad works? There is none. That's an unjust God. Who wants an unjust God? I don't. Right? You think of, where was it? Oh, well, plus, even the possibility. It's impossible that our good works could possibly outweigh our bad works. What does Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount? He makes it clear that our sins go to the thought level. Even our thoughts are counted as sins. It is impossible. It's impossible to outweigh bad works with good works. Okay? I mean, plus, too, it makes God unholy. Because one sin makes us worthy of eternal punishment. One sin. That's how holy our God is. But I guess not in Islam. Hinduism, another good one, goes by works. You hope to do enough good works to reach a higher level of existence when you get reincarnated. I don't know if many of you are familiar with Hinduism, but they believe in reincarnation and getting up to higher levels the next time you come back to life, okay? It becomes this endless cycle, though, where you have this hope that eventually you build up enough karma to eventually somehow achieve bliss. Okay? It's this endless cycle, really. Who is going to have enough good works to achieve this imaginary idea of bliss? Okay? Even if we think of the typical American, what does the typical American think? They think everyone goes to heaven. How many funerals have you been to where they mention hell? Has anybody been to a funeral where they mention hell? Raise your hand. I have been to two, and it's because I was speaking. Now, I wasn't saying this person went to hell. I was saying that, you know, there's believers and unbelievers, so it's a perfect opportunity to talk about hell, that hell is a real possibility. But other than that, I have never heard the mention of hell. The typical American thinks that everyone goes to heaven regardless of what you believed, regardless of how they lived. But again, this is, what kind of a God is that? That's not a just God. There's no payment for sin. Just God gives everybody a free card. You're here. You go to heaven. We're all good. That's not a just God. The God of the Bible is a just God. Right? He executes justice. We have the hope that one day God will make everything right. He, our God of the Bible, executes justice. Okay? And like I said, some religions, they completely deny an afterlife. Your typical atheist denies an afterlife. About a month ago, we were in a park near where we live. There was a booth set up for, maybe some of you have heard of it, maybe some, there's a religious group called the Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad, Muhammad Ali. I don't know if you've heard of those names. Of course, Muhammad Ali. But I did not know they don't believe in an afterlife. And that to me is even worse than these other religions I mentioned. He's just like, what's the point? What is the point? Just why not end it now? Get it over with. Why am I going to be sad? Why am I going to go through all the pains of life if it all just ends and I poof into thin air? It's pointless. Right? Life without the God of the Bible, this God that gives hope, that we read about, that we know personally, he's the only one who gives meaning to life. But life without him, it's dark, it's hopeless. There's no meaning. It's a very sad way to live. Right? And we see this in people we know, don't we? Now, some people are completely happy in their sins. They're completely happy. They don't think about it. And I've said that several times already. Others, though, are depressed. Others are despairing of life. Like Solomon is, or he was, because they've considered deeper things, they just haven't gotten to the truth that the Bible presents. Maybe there's someone here today that maybe you're living in despair. I don't know all of you. Maybe there's somebody here who's been depressed, and I'm not saying this is a definite, but I think that you should consider the possibility. Maybe it's because you've been excluding God from things that he wants you to include him in. We are meant to be connected to him by faith. He doesn't want us excluding things, as I said before, the boxes are boxes that we create as Americans. He wants us to include him. He wants us to include him in every area, every aspect of life. Maybe that's why you don't have so much joy as you should. It's a possibility. I know there's a lot of reasons for depression. I'm not saying that this is definite, but it could be. I think that everybody should at least consider it if they are in that spot today, all right? Now, let's go on to the next point, which is my favorite part because it's the good part. Well, it's all good, but it's more positive. Let's say that. So verses 24 to 26, I love this. This is why I chose this chapter. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. So he flips the perspective here. This also I saw is from the hand of God. First mention of God in the passage. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given him wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give it to the one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. So this is my last point. The God of the Bible alone, he gives life to everything he touches. Some of you know of that myth of the Midas touch, the king who touches things, it becomes gold. That God touches, he touches things and he gives it life. He gives it meaning. Now notice what Solomon says here. He says we can enjoy simple things, eating, working. We don't have to run after all sorts of worldly pleasure imaginable to find enjoyment. You notice that? You see the difference? I hope you see the difference. Putting God into the equation gives us this long-lasting joy that Solomon was seeking, that we also seek. Okay? Everybody wants joy. Notice also verse 26, he says that God gives wisdom and knowledge. Now, wait a second. He had said before that these things are pointless. But remember, he wasn't including God in them, wasn't he? But now he's including God. He's flipped his perspective. He's talking now about a God-given one, not a worldly one, right? Psalm 16, it says what? That in his presence, in God's presence is fullness of joy, right? Verse 25 says, who can eat? Who can have enjoyment apart from God? The answer, as we saw, is no one. No one can have enjoyment apart from him. Without God, life is pointless. It is joyless if you consider it deeply. And I'm 100% convinced of that. I'm convinced of that. I've seen so many people die in my workplace. I used to work in the ICU. And the majority of these families have absolutely no hope because they don't believe in this God that we're talking about this morning. They put all their hope in a God that they just hope exists. One that is not just. One that never disagrees with anything that they believe. One that doesn't demand any sort of payment for sin. One that really is a God of their own making. What kind of a hope can a God like that give? It can't. On the other hand, we see our God. He creates us, we're born separated from him because of Adam, but if we come to him in faith, he gives us meaning. He gives us life. He gives us value. I love Solomon's conclusion here. If only people could recognize that. Instead of chasing after all these empty things, we as Americans, we love our distractions, don't we? Oh my goodness, we see so many people run after these trivial things that really don't matter. We talk about even pointless things a lot. Even in the church, we sometimes do that. We talk about meaningless things. We chase after them. And God's like, I'm right here. I gave you everything. Chase after me. That's what God wants. Oh, there's a God who can give you everlasting joy this morning, one day, and it'll be consummated by being directly in his presence one day, instead of going after these dumb, silly activities. My prayer is that everybody here knows that joy I'm talking about. I hope you do. If you don't, please talk to somebody. Don't leave today. Don't go home without knowing that joy that I'm talking about. Okay? And in light of the New Testament, connecting to the New Testament, that joy is only found by faith in his son, Jesus. That's the only way. Okay? I really hope that even if you've been a Christian here for 70, 80 years, I know some of you are on the older side, I really hope that you still marvel at that Jesus died for me. Jesus rose again for me. He gives me meaning. I really do hope you marvel at that still. Right? But when you remain separated from God like Solomon in the majority of this chapter, what you stumble about, you can't find your way. Life is bleak if you consider it deeply. Okay? There's so many of us, so many Americans waste their time. Okay? If you're far from God today, maybe you don't have that same communion with him as you once did. There's no reason. There's nothing stopping you. There really is nothing. Come close to God, right? But that's what I have for today. I have no idea how long I lasted, but I can keep going if you want. But just to recap, what did we say? They said pleasures without God are meaningless. Wisdom without God is meaningless. Really, life without God logically leads us to despair. And then lastly, most importantly, God alone gives us meaning. He alone gives us value. So let me pray.